Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday afternoon. And joining me today, his insight is valuable all year round, but is extremely valuable over this next 3 or 4 weeks. Our front office insider, Bobby Marks, joining us from Naples. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Man, the emails I start getting from you are like platinum. it's funny, like, sometimes I'll be talking to a front office guy, and they'll say something in passing, like, "Well, I saw that Bobby said this, and Bobby said that." I mean, you're not working in the league anymore per se, but you could
always have an unofficial advisory role. How's that sound?
That definitely is the case. So I thought we would go over a couple of teams today and take a look at what their options are and what's on the table for them. You'd know better. Nobody better in the world, really, for you, other than you, to take a look at this. So we talked in the pod the other day about Philly. I think Philly is one of the most important teams to watch at the deadline, because obviously they're going to be, you know, they're a contender, and we expect them to be amongst all the contenders. They probably are the most trade-ready team with the available expiring contracts that they have and the first-round picks they have. They're ready to go. And we'll talk a lot about Philly in the coming days. But I think one of the interesting things to me is Philly has sort of, in my view, three choices. They can hold their potential salary cap space until the summer, by which they would trade for players who are on expiring contracts so that they can still improve their roster now, but then also be a salary cap player in the summer. How much do you think they're projected for right now, Bobby?
Like 55, and that takes into account Embiid, Maxey's free agent hole, Paul Reed, Jaden Springer, basically four guys on. I mean, certainly it could go up another maybe seven, but in that 55, 60 range right there.
Right. So they would be in the market where they could sign a max player and then another significant free agent and then sign Tyrese Maxey. They wouldn't lose Maxey. Or they can use their space now, this so-called pre-agency, where they trade their expiring contracts for guys on longer-term deals. Or the third option, which is sort of to split the path, which is where they maybe use part of their space, save part of their space, or trade for players who they could keep or could jettison, depending on the structure of their contract or the type of player that they are. And so I'm sure that this is something that Daryl Morey and his staff have talked a lot about, giving you an example of a player they could do. Like, for example, Bojan Bogdanović. He's a classic player where Philly would be interested because they can go all directions. His contract next year is only partially guaranteed for how much, Bobby?
Right around $2 million.
Okay. So they could take him, keep him for $20 million on their books, and use him as a very useful player. They could cut him, which I doubt they would actually do, but they could cut him and say goodbye, open that space back up. And they could also trade for him now and help and him be immediate help now. Now, I don't know whether they can swing that type of trade, but those are the paths that I see for Philly, Bobby. I don't know how you see it for him.
No, I think you hit it right on the head. I think, you know, the perfect path is, as you said, kind of splitting it down the middle here, where you can go out and get one or two players at the deadline that can help you win now, and then also have the flexibility if you want to go free agent shopping or retain some of your own players if they're not part of the trades. So, for example, if you want to bring back DeAnthony Melton and re-sign him, you have the optionality to do that. We'll see what happens with Tobias Harris. I think you go back and look at how Denver was in a little bit of a different situation because they weren't a cap space team, but they went out and got Aaron Gordon in 2021, and then they got KCP in right before the offseason of 22. It cost them one first round pick total for both players. And that's coming that's a 2025 first that Orlando has. If you have to use one, then you have all those, you know, you have the rest of your picks available. I think the interesting thing here, Brian, is they've got three first round picks to trade. Now, come the night of the draft, that increases to five because they'll be able to move their 2024 first, and then they can also move a 2031 because of the 7-year rule. So it almost like it not doubles, but it gets you another two first round picks here. And the cap space game, as you know, you know, there's a lot of caution flags there, man, rolling out with the sounds great. We've got 65 million or 50. We got it. And then all of a sudden, you're like, you know, who's there, right? Who, you know, certainly you can make trades and bring back players. I know you got you and Tim and the Tim's talked about Detroit the other day. It's like you have to not have an idea of like going into the offseason, who are your guys, like who your you know, your $40 million guy, who's your $20 million guy here. And you look at, and we'll see what happens with Siakam in the next few weeks here, but who's going to be the free agents out there, right? Like who are the marquee guys? If it's not, if OG stays in New York and what happens with Pascal, and you know, we're not talking about LeBron and Kawhi's back, is it Paul George? If things kind of hit the skids a little bit, I don't know. But at the end of the day, like for me, it's like, I want to improve the roster at the deadline. And then I want to still have the flexibility. Now what's improving the roster. And I'll give you kind of a little bit of a sneak peek to the Sixers. Like what is it? And I know there's a lot of baggage that comes with him because of what happened in Charlotte. What's the cost of Miles Bridges? What's the cost of Miles Bridges in Charlotte for if you want him for a 4-month rental? His bird rights do not transfer in a trade because he signed a 1-year deal. So it's not like you're getting him and you're like, oh, we can pay him whatever. But you could if you wanted to use some of that cap space here. But
he'd also have to approve the trade.
And he'd have to approve it also.
Which if he was going to a place that had cap space, he would be interested in doing that, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're not going to approve it if you're going to the Clippers, for example, where they basically can only sign him to like $9 million here. But I think that's the thinking if you're in that Sixers front office, is that you've got to kind of to make some gradual tweaks here, but then also, as you said, have that flexibility in the offseason.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing about them is, you know, Daryl has talked, and maybe he regrets saying this because it's attributed to him a lot ahead of moves. I can't remember what the percentage chance that he would say was, but he was like, if you have a 5% chance of winning the title, you are obligated to go for it. And I agree with that.
Yeah.
In a vacuum, you know, they would qualify for that. Like they have a chance. Who knows what's actually going to be on their plate, but ultimately if he feels like they've got a shot to go this year, he's kind of got to sacrifice the future and take the players now. I think that's based on his own words from the past. And
he's made 81 trades since he's been an executive, second most only to Sam Presti.
Wow. And a lot of, and when it comes to core players and in-season trades, I think Daryl's got to be way ahead of Sam. Because
he definitely, yeah. I mean, you can go back to the Harden Simmons. You can go back to even in his Houston days, the most complicated. I think that was like the Clint Capella trade with, you know, I mean, there's been, you know, multiple different, different instances as far as like he's never, I don't think he'll ever be content, right? Like, you know, except besides Embiid and Maxey, like those two core guys here, I don't think he'll ever be content until he's got that finished product.
Jackson dug up the quote. Quote, if you've got even a 5% chance to win the title, and that group includes a very small number of teams every year, you got to be focused all on winning the title. And I would say they're in the 5%.
Yep.
Or I'd say they are the handful of teams that have at least 5%. We could debate on that. All right. Among the other teams that you were particularly interested in, you brought up the Orlando Magic to me. I think interesting about the Orlando Magic is that they are one of the few teams that has a totally clean sheet on their pick situation. In fact, they are plus picks. In other words, you mentioned a minute ago how they have the Nuggets 25 pick. They have all their picks. I think you've said that they have plus 5 second round picks. They're like, they got
a ton, 12.
Yeah. 12 so they teams. have 8 first round picks at their disposal, only 5 of which are tradable,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Only. The Phoenix Suns heard 5 tradable first round picks and passed out. But they, in theory, could trade 5 first round picks between now and the trade and the draft, and have 12 second round picks, of which they could trade them all. They are a team that's on the edge. They had a favorable schedule early in the season. That said, they chewed it up, and as their schedule has stiffened and they've dealt with a couple of injury things, they've gone from second place in the East. They've gone all the way back to 8th. They've lost 6 of their last 10. They actually have an interesting game with Cleveland later this week. Cleveland is one of the hottest teams in the league. They've won 5 in a row, although all 5 against losing teams, 2 of them against Washington, 1 of them against the Spurs. But having said that, the Cleveland is, as we do this podcast, in fourth place. And Cleveland is actually, I think, a possible first-round opponent for Orlando this year in one way or another. But you put Orlando. Orlando hasn't done a buy trade in quite some time. And so I wonder, there's a reason why you're bringing them up to me. I wonder what you think of that.
Yeah, I mean, I just look at them. They're kind of in one of the, they're almost like Oklahoma City, where they've got like this 2 to 3 year financial window before things start to get expensive here. And when I mean what you have Franz Wagner and Jalen Suggs extension eligible this upcoming offseason. Paolo Banchero is the following offseason. There's been a retooling, rebuilding phase that started in 21 with the Gordon trade here. And as you look at it, like, although they're in eight right now, at worst, they'll get two play-in games, because you look at teams 9 and 10, who's there, right? There's a big difference between the top eight and kind of everyone else.
Let me just say it. As we sit here on Tuesday afternoon, Chicago is 4 games back of Orlando for ninth, and Brooklyn is 5.5 back for 10th. So yes, sorry, not to interrupt you, but
no. And then you have, when you look at what they have, they've got a bunch of expiring contracts, right? Markelle Fultz, who's been injured, who was a starter at one time and now was injured and is still, Gary Harris is on a $13 million expiring contract. You know, the guy that you hear a lot about is Wendell Carter Jr. And I know he's been in and out of the lineup with injuries here because his contract's terrific. The one thing Orlando does well is that they structure their contracts. And a lot of the times they either have a team option on the end or they descend. So it makes it appealing. And Carter's, by the time you get to next year, it's going to be below the non-tax mid level, which is at $13 million. That's a great contract if he's on the court here. One of the bottom, I think they're 28th or 29th in three-point shooting. The game they had, it was last week, the game that Caleb Houston shot 7 for 14 from three, and I think they won. I'm not sure who it was, but you're like, oh, this is the recipe, right? Make three. You know, if you can get a guy out there, I can make five or six threes. Yeah. And then like the next game, he goes 2 for 9. You're like, oh, you know, like we're back to the same thing. So if there's a deal out there now, who are the guys, right? Is what's the cost for Buddy Hield, and would Indiana help out a team they're competing for with one of these playoff spots if they're getting a first round pick?
From your notes, by the way, they're 12-5 when they shoot better than 35% from three.
Yeah.
35% is not a special night.
No.
45% is a special night.
So that's for me, that's what I'm looking at. You know, it's so when we talked about Wendell Carter, they, you know, Goga Padadze had played really well, but is going to be a free agent. So if you're going to move off Carter to upgrade shooting, you better have a comfort level that you're going to be able, you're resigning him in the offseason here. But I just look at our Orlando, where they don't have to kind of go all in. You know, they could still see like, hey, what's this roster look like in a playoff series? We'll reevaluate in the offseason, but they've got the resources with those expirings. They've got that Carter Jr. As you said, they've got all their own in that. And they still got a little bit of cap space too. And they've got that 25 Denver pick.
Yeah. They haven't been a factor in so long. I think the last time they made the playoffs, Steve Clifford was their coach and they finished eighth, and they just haven't been a factor in so long that, you know, you don't even really know how Jeff Weltman, there's no track record.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know what they're going to do. I mean, we're sitting here looking at their hand and trying to forecast it, but, and even now I know they're still in eighth, but I mean, they have some teeth. I mean, they can do some things, and especially if they get a little bit of help.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. The other Eastern Conference team that you brought up to me as a team that you thought was interesting was Charlotte.
Yeah.
Now, Charlotte's in a bit of a fascinating situation. They have brand new owners. Gabe Plotkin and Rick Schnall bought the team before the season started. Michael Jordan retained a percentage, but basically those guys have the team right now. They have made no changes. Their team president, Fred Whitfield, retired or left the job. He disclosed that he had been fighting cancer. That's not a basketball operations move. They have made no changes to their basketball operations, as far as I'm aware. No significant changes to their leadership, to their operations. They've made no significant roster moves. I mean, they signed LaMelo Ball. That was kind of, I mean, I could have done that. They elected to bring Miles Bridges back on the qualifying offer, but they have essentially made no transactions whatsoever, Bobby. And they're a bad team. They're not in the Wizards Pistons class, but they're only barely out of that zone. They are really not going anywhere. And they have a bunch of guys on their roster who on significant contracts, starting with Gordon Hayward, who's at the last year of a $31 million deal. This is a team that I have heard some of their players mentioned in trade in talking with executives, but is still a bit of a mystery on what they're going to do.
You know, when I write the trade guides, it's usually players or executives. I never have owners as far as what to watch. And for Charlotte, I have both their owners as far as what to watch, just because, as you just laid out, you know, the evaluation process, you know, Mitch Kupchak, who's their, you know, head of basketball operations, how much authority does he have, you know, to swing a big trade? And now, would, like, for example, like, just a hypothetical here, let's say you could trade Gordon Hayward and another player for Zach LaVine, and you don't have to give up anything, right? Like, you don't have to give up draft picks, anything.
Right. Literally, they could do that, right? This afternoon. I think they could do that. Yeah.
Are you comfortable taking back that $138 million owed if Mitch isn't your guy, and then you're going to have to go in your, and you have another executive in waiting, or you want to hire? Is that person going to want to come in and inherit that? You know, you got a max backcourt. You got a max backcourt in LaMelo Ball and Zach LaVine. That's a big thing.
And look, Mitch Kupchak is about to turn 70 years old. They have brand new owners and are in need of a major retrofit. I'll stay away from the word rebuild, but you're asking a realistic question. So, but for now, Mitch is the general manager. He's involved in contract talks and stuff like that, or not contract, but trade talks and stuff like that. So it is a question about what's going to happen. If Gordon Hayward stays there beyond the deadline, do you think he's a buyout candidate?
He could be, but you
give up his bird rights.
Yeah, then buyouts become tricky, because then you lose bird rights, as you know, and then you're basically cast in the wind come the off season, right? Like, you're just
right. You know, the other thing is, yeah,
that then the rules, you know, then you know the apron rules, as far as, you know, he's a 31-5 guy, so you basically eliminate a lot of these, you know, eight or nine teams there. And
Bobby just moved past that, but I was going to clarify, in the new rules, if you're in the aprons, the first or second apron, you can't sign a player who, before he got bought out, made more than the average player's salary.
Yep.
So most of the teams,
the Blake Griffin, I guess could we call it the Blake Griffin / LaMarcus Aldridge rule, when the league went on fire that year when those two guys signed in Brooklyn?
How much did Blake leave on the table?
Oh, a lot that he's probably never recoup it. I mean, I think it was one of the bigger buyouts we've seen in a long time.
I will say, I've told the story on the pod before, but it's a long time ago. When Mike Bibby, he was with the Hawks, and the first year LeBron was in Miami. And I just say, I've said this before, I learned a lesson from this. He took a buyout, I believe, of $5 million. He left $5 million on the table to get out of his deal with the Hawks. And he signed with Miami for the minimum. And he signed, and I think it was like a Saturday morning. There was very few media there, unusual for the Heat. And he came up to the podium after shoot around or practice. And there was only a couple of us there. And I asked him, I go, how did you justify leaving $5 million? He was near the end of his career. He might have finished that year, might have played one more year. And he basically said, don't talk to me about my money. I was like, you know what? You're right. I won't. However, I should point out to the fans that you gave up $5 million. But in the new era, a player has to consider that. Like, part of the reason you give up money is to go play for a championship. But if you're, Philly right now is into the tax, but perhaps they could make moves to get out of the tax. The Lakers, by the way, could make moves to get out of the tax. But that's a factor. The other thing that's a factor is that all teams must now spend to the salary floor. And so Charlotte, I don't know what's going to happen next year. Maybe they have to give Gordon Hayward a contract just to, carry over, just to meet the salary floor. That's Bruce Brown was the big beneficiary of that this year. The Pacers were pretty far below salary floor. They gave him $20 million. Nobody was offering. He had a great year last year, won the title. Nobody was offering Bruce Brown $20 million. He was like, yes, I will take the $20 million. That's also a reason why he wouldn't get bought out. But I think the guys who are interesting here, you mentioned Miles Bridges before, Bobby, and Terry Rozier, a guy who's got he's a pretty productive player. Mm-hmm. He has 2 years left on his contract. I believe the last year is a team option.
It's got a really small, it's guaranteed for almost like 90%. No, there's some clauses in there. If they reach like the second round of the playoffs, it becomes fully guaranteed and stuff. So Brian, he's one of these guys. And when you talk to teams about this new CBA, he's like the perfect, him and a group of other players, like these $20 million guys. Like the net. So if you're not willing to go get an A-lister, a $40 million guy, if you already got two max guys, how do you build out the rest? These 20 million, the Malcolm Brogdons of the world, Jared Allen's a good name. Yeah. Like these guys in that range, DeJounte Murray is another one who's at $18, $19 million. Like they're in that they're in a really good fit because it's like that third guy, but then you can maybe get a fourth guy at 19, yes, right? You get two of them, two guys that equal maybe one. And so Rozier, I think he's got, unless you come in, there's something comes in and just totally makes sense for a Charlotte team that does not control their first round pick. Their pick goes, it's protected. I don't think it will carry, but their pick goes to San Antonio, which was actually part of the Murray trade. Like when Atlanta traded a 25, 27 unprotected, a 26 swap unprotected, the Hornets pick was part of that. That's protected for the next few years here. So if you're Charlotte, hey, if someone comes in and say, hey, we'll give you two first rounds for Terry Rozier, then some, maybe that's what you think about. But I think from a value standpoint, he'll have more value. He'll have value next year, probably too, or in the offseason, if that's what you want to do.
Yes. I've gone on Jags before about the importance of in the new rules of the third salary.
Yep.
And if the third, you can afford two maxes, but if your third player is a max player, he got to be a max player. I don't mean like what he's getting paid. I mean, he's got to actually produce like that because the rest of your team isn't going to be there. Let me give you Rozier's numbers. He's averaging 24 points a game, shooting 46% overall from the field, which is the highest of his career, shooting 37% on threes on 8 a game. That is, he has been a couple of points better at times in his career, but that is quality, known to chuck it a little bit, but he's also averaging 7 assists. He's playing a lot at point guard because LaMelo has been out so much. And as you said, I think it's 22 this year, 24, 20, or 23, 24, 25 for the next 3 years. That's, it's not the greatest value in the league, but it's not bad value, which is why you see teams keeping an eye on him. And why Charlotte might be interested there. The question is, what Charlotte would want in return? Because they don't control their pick, they would probably want a pick, is my guess. But that's definitely a team that's sort of low-key to watch, I would think, as you've said. Okay, another team that you brought up to me is the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, the Pelicans have had a fascinating season. There have been times where they have looked absolutely horrendous, including the in-season tournament. There are times when some of their spirit and their play and their defense has been awful. Zion has kind of been all over the place, been great, been average, been bad. But they've been winning. Now, Dallas did just get them. They just are finishing up this long road trip. They have won 7 out of their last 10. They've had some impressive wins in there. One of the reasons why they're playing better, I don't think this is a huge insight here by me, is that their team has been healthy. Like they've had their three best players healthy for like the last 3-4 weeks, which is Zion, Brandon Ingram, and CJ McCollum. And lo and behold, when your three best players actually can play, they've got some things going for them. But Bobby, there's something interesting about the Pelicans and the luxury tax. Maybe you can tell us about.
Well, they've never paid it. So that's for one thing. They're projected to pay a $4.4 million penalty in the luxury tax, which isn't that big of a deal, right? They're $2.9 million over. The tax distribution is right around a little bit north of $14 million. So if you duck under, that's an $18 million savings that right. ownership will get as far as the tax and then the distribution that you're going to get in. So who, you know, this is a deep roster, right? Like this is a deep roster. You can go, you know, 10, 11 deep. You know, Kyra Lewis Jr. is on the last year of his contract. He's on an expiring. If from a pure business perspective, if you're just looking to get under, I'm sure there's teams out there that would, you know, take him on. If you got to put cash in the deal, or if you got to attach a second or something in there, that's the economic, you know, non-basketball impact there, because I think there is a priority when you're that close to being, under the tax to go out and make a deal like that.
Yeah. So, that's the thing you're talking about. So how much does Lewis make?
He's at, what is he at? Like 5'9"? Hold on. Let me pull up his thing here.
So this is one of those, potential trades that would happen at, 257, on trade deadline day.
He's at 5'7".
Okay. So they probably would owe him about 2 and change.
Yep.
And actual money left on his salary. The Pelicans teams are allowed to put as much as $7 million into trades, and they're allowed to receive as much as $7 million.
Yep.
Which prevents teams from just selling.
They got the full, kitty of both. So,
right. So Bobby just said that if they were to get out of the tax, not only would they save the tax money, $4 million, but they would get the check from all the other teams that pay the tax, which is about right now about 14.
Yep.
So it's $18 million. Let's say they had to, send Kyra Lewis. They send the money to pay the rest of his salary and a pick. And next thing you know, they've done a deil that saved them. That's, got $15 million to the good. Now that's not exciting to talk about, but I think the only two teams that have never paid the tax in the history of the tax, which dates back over 20 years now, are the Hornets and the Pelicans. The Hornets haven't been around for all that time, but they also have new ownership. So I don't know if they'll stay on that list, but I think the Pelicans will be on the list by the end of the season. Now, the interesting thing is you mentioned their depth. All right. They have Jonas Valanciunas, who has a very large expiring contract. He is also a useful player, particularly as an offensive rebounder, one of the best offensive rebounders in the league. I don't think they're looking to trade him, just to be clear. However, whenever you get into a situation that involves New Orleans, there's two things that come up. One, that they have Valanciunas' contract. Two, the amount of picks and young players that they have. So they have all of their first round picks, 7 of them going forward, plus the Lakers' first round pick, unprotected, which they can either use in 24 or 25. My guess is they're not going to use it this year, Bobby.
Yeah. You have, I think June 1st or March, May, right after the lottery, they have the decision to make, and especially for next year's draft, which could be intriguing. You always would like to have that wild card there just in case, right?
Right. Then they have their Bucks stock.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So they have a Bucks first round pick in 2025 that's protected top 4. This is for Drew Holiday, who's since been traded.
Yeah.
That's top 4 protected. Okay.
Well, no, it's so how it works is, so it's 25. They have the Bucks pick if it's in 1-4.
If it's
5-30, New York has 5-30.
Okay.
They basically kind of split it. I think it was originally part of the CJ trade that went to Portland, and then Portland sent it to Detroit, and Detroit, it's been bandied around here. But if somehow things really go haywire in Milwaukee and it's the number 2 pick in the draft, New Orleans will have that pick.
Well, what they also have, which I can't believe would be available, is the Bucks unprotected first in 27. Now, I know Giannis is signed, but we'll see about 2027. I wouldn't think that pick would be available right now. But my point is, they have all their picks plus 2 others potentially interesting picks because I don't know what's going to happen with LeBron in 2025. I feel like LeBron's going to play next year, but I don't know if it's going to be for the Lakers. Probably, but he's got an opt-out. There's reasons to have discussions about this. So they have a lot there. You know, they have, a lot to trade. I think of their young players, Dyson Daniels is a lottery pick from last year, who's an interesting player. He got to play a little bit earlier this year when they were wrecked with injuries to Alvarado and CJ. Showed some interest, you know, some stuff. Like they have Larry Nance, who comes off the bench for them, but is a good defensive player that teams would like. Like, it doesn't take much to construct a trade here. And Bobby, what do you think is realistic for the Pelicans other than we feel like they're going to get under that tax?
Yeah, it's funny. When I was typing the New Orleans, the end of the New Orleans section, they were playing at the time and I was writing about Valanciunas and he's like, and I hear in the background, and that's 26 for Valanciunas tonight, a season high. And I'm thinking, oh my God, it's just fitting, right? When you're writing about somebody.
Right.
I think if the New Orleans, and as you said, there's moving him is like, it's not a priority, right? I think the goal would be if you can get a center that's under contract for the next few years. That, you know, we talked about Wendell Carter Jr. in Orlando. Would that make sense? Because Carter's on such a good contract. Like for me, and it's not going to happen. Like, but if things had really gone off the skids in Cleveland, like I would have just said to, if I was Griff, I would call his former understudy, Kobe Altman. I'd said, pick what you want from our roster outside of, you know, these certain players for Jared Allen. Like that's like and Jared's been, as you know, Brian, it's been tremendous. And
I think he should get serious all-star consideration. Yeah. We'll see how it all plays out. But yeah.
But that's the idea, is like a guy that's got like two or three years left on his contracts is making in that 15 to 20 range. So, you know, but if you don't make a deal, you go into the off season. And if Valanciunas is your guy, if you want to, you know, the ability to resign him, you could do it. But from a trade standpoint, I think we'd be getting to try to target a player that's got a couple years left on his contract.
Yeah. And I will say this. So Brandon Ingram, he has 1 year left after this season. I spoke, and I think it's all public. I think it's all been said now, but I spoke to Brandon about it last summer when he was with Team USA. And basically, he told me he didn't want to resign. He just wanted to leave the option open of making all NBA so that he could get the Supermax. He's actually having a pretty good season, but he's not having an all NBA season. And so in the summer, they're going to, you know, they don't have to do something with him, but if he doesn't extend, that might get interesting. So I don't know how they plot that piece that they go forward. But, you know, if they do re-sign him, that's going to hit the books at a pretty big number, even without the Supermax. This is what I've nicknamed the Stress Max, Bobby. Yeah. We're in Stress Max zone with Brandon Ingram because it's stress on their side, stress on his side. But so that's something interesting to keep an eye on.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, barrel-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Because we're talking a little bit about the tax, real quick, I want to talk real quick about the Lakers situation.
Sure.
What is the Lakers tax position?
They are, pull them up right now. They're like right under. And you got to worry about the apron too, right? Because they did the
Gabe Vincent.
Gabe Vincent and Torian Prince, so it triggered the first apron, which we call the hard cap. So from a tax standpoint, they're 1.26 below. And then from the apron, they're 4.94 below. I'm sorry, for the tax, they're over 1.26. Right. And then the apron, they're below, right below that there. So they are a repeater, what we call a repeater tax team. This would be the fourth year in a row or 4 out of 5 years. But that small amount, it's not a make or break, but they're still in the tax there.
And there's ways the Lakers can make a trade to improve with just having to shed 1.3. They could make a trade, improve their roster, and get out of the tax.
Sure. If you're sending out a $14 million player for an $18 million player, you get under there.
Yeah. So,
or a $15.7 million player for a $19 million player.
Well, and what Bobby's referring to here is a possible DeJounte Murray trade. It doesn't take high-level cap mechanics to figure out how the Lakers could trade for DeJounte Murray, get him, get that contract that you talked about, a guy on a favorable deal based on the machinations, and get out of the luxury tax, which would save them.
They'll be like New Orleans. Look at that $14 million.
Plus, you know, like in the repeater, over being over a million, yeah, is like it being somewhere in the neighborhood of 15, 16 million.
Yep.
So, you know, 15 million to the Lakers, they can find uses for that. I remember years and years ago, I always tell these stories, Bobby. I know people probably get bored of them, but years and years ago when Dr. Buss was still alive, I remember the Lakers made like a deadline trade where I think it was Chris Mim. They traded Chris Mim to save $3 million. And I remember saying to somebody, why would they do that? Why would the Lakers need another $3 million? And they're like, that's $3 million more for Jerry Buss to take to the tables in Vegas. And it was a joke, but like, that's true. You know, like if the Lakers make an extra $6 million, each one of the six Buss kids gets an extra million. I don't know what to tell you. That's just the way it is. I'm not saying they make decisions based on that, sure, but when you look at the possibility of trading your roster, improving your roster, and saving $15 million, it might make it a little easier for them to include a draft pick, you know, first rounder.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like if you were $10 million over the luxury tax and like, you know, when you're in that, like that 1 to 4 range, you know, there are deals out there to get you under, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, saving $14 million. I think what the interesting thing is, I heard you guys talk about this on the last podcast, is the DeJounte Murray trade bonus, right?
Yes. Please bring this up to me, because you said something to me about this that I
highest, think it's the highest in the NBA. 13.
Is it the highest ever?
I have to go look at a note. You know what? I think it could be. I have to go look at my notes. And people have to realize, like, and you guys have said it, guys with max contracts have trade bonuses in there, but there's rules in place where the bonus can't exceed the max allowed. So if there was never a rule in place, then yeah, these guys would have their trade bonus would be like $30 million and stuff,
right.
it's the percentage of what is owed on the salary here. So as of today, the Murray trade bonus is $13.4 million. It's the most in the NBA. Second is Anthony Davis at $12.9 million, two clutch players. So clutch likes to put trade bonuses in his contract. Here's the interesting thing when you go look at the DeJounte Murray trade bonus. When Murray did his extension with San Antonio, rookie extension, the trade bonus was not in there. It was a straight deal. However, when he did his rookie extension, they opened up the San Antonio contract and amended that and added a trade bonus in that contract. And they added put a trade bonus in the rookie and this new extension. So he's getting it. He's getting the bonus on what's left this year. And he's also getting the bonus on what is owed to him over the next 4 seasons here. So it's like,
they
he got
opened
a hit from
up the contract. How is that allowed?
They amended it. They amended it to add a bonus. It's, you know, you're allowed to, you can do that there. So they add an exhibit 4 with the trade bonus. It's at $13.4 million. If he's traded, let's say we get off this podcast and he's traded, you can negotiate, right? You can negotiate it down, and you can, I mean, that's a lot of money though. Going to LA, yeah, taxes, right? It's spread out over 4 years. You don't include the last year, which is a player option as far as adding. So $3.4 million would be added to each year. Atlanta pays the bonus, but for cap purposes, that number gets added to that, you know, that 18 and change number that Murray has.
Does Atlanta have to give him the full $13 million now, or they just pay it over the next 3 years?
Two installments. So here's your big picture. And I know, like, you're not supposed to look back on trades that happened. Okay. So we're going to pay this guy $13.4 million. And then, you know what, next year we're going to send that unprotected 25 to San Antonio, and an unprotected swap in 26 and unprotected in 27 here. So if you're Atlanta, you're trying to recoup as much. You're not getting what you gave up, right? Like, that didn't happen. So you're trying to recoup as much as you can before you're kind of moving off him.
Right. But so all the other thing is that DeJounte Murray's cap number changes going forward. So you were talking about how attractive he is at 19 or 20 million on your books. But then, even though the Lakers don't have to pay that extra $3 million a year, he hits their books with the extra three. Well, I don't mean to sound like the Lakers have him. Team X trades for him. I know the Nets are a team.
Well, yeah. I mean, he goes from a 24 point or $25 million player next year to a $28 million guy. Right. Then he's going to be 30, then 31. Like, that nice.
Right. So whatever team would have interest in trading for him, that he becomes a little bit more onerous on their cap. However, if you're a team like the Lakers and you save $15 million in the transaction, you can kind of put that in an interest-bearing account and say, okay, if we have to pay tax on this extra money over the next 3 years, we did save $15 million when we got him. And that, again, I don't want to make it seem like he's definitely going to be a Laker. Because I think that was one thing that Woj was talking about last week, is it's not just the Lakers bidding. But the more I look at this DeJounte Murray situation, even if he's not the absolute perfect fit for the Lakers, I do think it makes more sense as I talk about it, why they would be interested in that trade. And there's another player who might actually make sense for the Lakers on another team you wanted to talk about, which is the Portland Trail Blazers, who are going nowhere fast.
You know, it's interesting. There, you know, certainly two players. You know, Jeremy Grant signed that 5 for $160. His restriction came off. That number increases. Where the Kyle Kuzma contract decreases.
Yeah.
You know, Kyle signed for 4 for $94, and it drops. Like, that's a good contract. Like, that's $19-20 million for him is a good value. Grant goes up.
They signed that contract with the intention of trading Kyle Kuzma someday. Maybe not in 24. And maybe he goes on and he has a statue outside whatever new arena is being built.
The Alexandria, wherever.
Right. But they signed that contract with the intent to eventually trade him. I was befuddled the moment the Jeremy Grant contract was signed, because I'm pretty sure the Blazers knew they were going to trade Dame Lillard. And even if they weren't 100% sure that they were going to trade him, there was nobody, in my view, bidding 5 and $160 for Jeremy Grant. Nobody could give him 5 anyway. And with all due respect, a guy that I got to know a little bit covering the Olympics, with all due respect, yeah, he was on the Olympic team, if you can believe that. The structure of the contract did not indicate they were signing him to trade him. It would make sense for a rebuilding team like Washington to retain an asset to sign to be traded. They did not do that with this deal. With all due respect to our friends in Portland, I hope you're doing well, Mike Schmitz, but I don't think it's the easiest contract to trade. However, Brogdon, who is a productive guard and has a shorter deal, much shorter deal, would be, Bobby.
Yeah, 22.5 this year and next year. Another one of those players that we've talked about in that $20 million range. So if you're the teams out there, that Brooklyn, for example, who needs, you know, listen, you know, we watch Nets games. Spencer Dinwiddie is basically out of the rotation at the end of these games. They're finishing with Dennis Smith Jr. And how reliable is Ben Simmons? Not very. It's got 2 years, 80 left. You don't have a point guard next year. If you're sitting on these Phoenix and Dallas picks, and maybe you put some protection on one and see if Portland is willing to bite, I think he'd be interested in an interesting name with the Lakers also, you know, Brogdon there. I think from Portland's perspective, and Scoot's played better of late, especially the other night, he played really well. But eventually you'd like to give him the keys to, at the end of these games here. Like you just like from a developmental phase here. And
I think he's already probably playing more minutes than he would. I mean, part of being a top three pick is you get more minutes because your team stink. But like Chauncey is probably playing him more than he would play on a team that was competitive.
Yeah, like Keontae George in Utah, they basically, you know, had the force. They basically had to start him because they had so many injuries. And now it's like 20 to 25 minutes is a nice number, right? Like it's hard, you know, rookie point guards playing north of 30 is a, it's a, that's a tall task.
Yeah. So Portland would be, you know, they're in rebuild mode and you'd expect them to do that. Jackson tells us Scoot's playing 32 minutes a game over the last 10 games.
Yeah.
And which is what they should do.
Yep.
But like,
yeah, I mean, like the Brooklyn game, the like just for real quick, like the game they won in Brooklyn, the overtime game, like I would like you felt like there was an intent to win that game at no matter what because Scoot didn't play the fourth in overtime and Brogdon hit the two big threes at the end.
Yeah,
which is fine. Like, listen, it's that's
one more team I want to ask you about before we go because you just mentioned Keontae George, Utah Jazz. The Utah Jazz last year, if you remember. After trading Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, who else did they trade? Royce O'Neal.
Bojan.
They were very competitive for the first third of the season. And then they sort of quiet quit. Don't tell anybody. The inverse is happening. They were pretty terrible at the start of the season. Will Hardy was coming out saying that was a bleep, bleep, bleep performance. And despite not being totally healthy, they are now in the play-in. They have won 6 in a row. They've won 9 of 10 as the result of this recording of this podcast. They're ahead of the Lakers, who I think they play coming up here. Or they just played them. They just played them and beat them. But they are also a team that is still very much in the early throes of a construction. We talked about them on a podcast recently. I talked about how I thought Kelly Olynyk would probably be available. But what do you see for Utah, knowing that Trader Danny is not afraid to make mid-season trades?
Yeah, I mean, it's 15-4 in the last 19.
Jeez, that's really good.
I mean, we remembered him being
Conley. They traded Conley too.
Yeah, well, they were, you know, they started last year 10-3 and then they were kind of like a 500 team at deadline and then moved Mike for a protected whatever top five pick from the Lakers, that Minnesota deal here. I look at Utah, if you're looking from a trade standpoint, it would be Olynyk. And then you have to ask yourself, okay, Kelly's coming off the bench for us. He's been good. Is there any value in just getting a couple seconds because he's on an expiring contract? Does that make sense for us? Or we just hold on to him? I think the one guy, and I think it's a matter of, you know, who you ask on from different teams is, you know, certainly Talon Horton Tucker's on an expiring $11 million contract. How do the teams view him there? Out of the rotation here, but I just look at Utah, like, you know, as you're sitting on so much draft capital, your own first, it goes to Oklahoma City. It's top 10 protected. I want to say, yeah, top 10 protected this year. So you would lose that, which is fine. Like I think for Utah is I want to see where these guys are in a play-in. Like they're almost like where Oklahoma City was a year ago. Like I want to see them in a play-in. I want to see you in a first round series and then maybe make a decision as far as where they are, but they're deep. Like Sexton has been really good. Putting John Collins at the five has been really smart. Walker Kessler is coming off the bench. Fontecchio has been good. Markkanen's been great. You don't have to worry about, your first round picks that you drafted, besides George has played 20-25 minutes at point guard here. You can let them develop here. So I don't think for me personally, like you don't have to go into deadline saying, oh, we've got these picks. We got to move. I think we're one move away from, you know, being where Minnesota and Denver is. Cause I don't think they are. So if there's anything out there, it would probably be Olynyk. I think he would be great in New York as far as adding another big that can stretch the floor. And then as far as I said, that Horton Tucker expiring.
Yeah. So they do have the 7th hardest schedule left. These numbers change. This is by winning percentage of their opponents. These numbers obviously change every day. So if you check back tomorrow, it might be 10th or 5th, but they do have a difficult portion of schedule left. which, by the way, Boston has the second easiest schedule left when you're projecting out who may be the overall number one pick. That's a different topic for a different day. But, you know, getting into the, you know, if you look at the teams around them, of the teams behind them, you know, obviously Golden State would figure they're going to go. But other than that, like, they might be able to outplay Houston. Houston's about 500. Memphis is not coming hard. So, like, yeah, they got a shot. They got a shot to get that play in. I would agree with you there. So I would also, having said that, if they get an offer that bowls them over for one of their players, I don't think anything's off the table.
Hey, listen, but if some team calls and says, hey, John Collins, we really like him. Two ones, you know, like, I don't think there's going to be, you know, think like, they, hey,
I would advise,
we're 15-4 in the last time. Oh, wait.
Yeah. But it wouldn't, let's put it this way. I think two-ish weeks ago, if you'd asked executives, are the Jazz buying or selling? They would laugh and say, of course they're selling. Now, I do think under certain circumstances that the Jazz would investigate adding a piece, especially if it didn't impact their cap or impact their options. I wouldn't rule it out. I still think that they'll mostly be taking the calls, but I could see them making a call or two. I think their situation has changed to the point where they, where Justin Zanuck and Danny Ainge would at least think about it. You know, A, if it was in sort of a low risk short term, mm-hmm. or higher upside long term, medium term, which is like what they did with John Collins. They basically got a free, you basically got him for free. I mean, other than they got to pay his salary, but they got to pay people salaries because it's the rules. But all right, Bobby, thank you so much for your insight. We really appreciate your time. Please check out all of Bobby's. You should definitely follow him on social media.
Yeah, we've got me and Kevin Pelton got rookie rankings out, which I'm sure makes a lot of people happy out there. That we still have Chet number one. We've got a couple two-way guys in there.
Can I just say, people listening to this pod know how I feel about Chet. Bontemps makes fun of me all the time. I'm super high on Chet. Love him. Love his game. Love his temperament.
Here's the thing I asked Brian, and I'm not a voter, right? I don't vote. I don't have any votes.
I am a voter and I will remain a voter.
I wrote this about Victor, and I played the hypothetical game. Okay. For the voters out there.
You didn't even let me get to the butt. You didn't even let me, you cut me right off.
What would happen if Victor was in Oklahoma City right now? Right.
Batten down the hatches.
Yep.
So
I don't think they're mailing that rookie of the year quite yet to Oklahoma City. Let this play out a little bit here.
I literally cannot say a single negative thing about Chet Holmgren. I love everything about him. I've been making jokes behind the scenes about how this is the next Magic Bird, Wembanyama Holmgren. It's a joke, but it comes from a place where I'm. Victor Wembanyama is playing 28 minutes a game and way less than that recently. 20, 10, and 3 blocks. And I know he can't make a shot yet. I know he can't make a shot, but wait till he does. You think he's never going to be able to shoot? That's all.
So we got rookie rankings out. Bontemps and I have got the 65 game restriction that is going to impact the MVP race and all that fun stuff. And then we've got the trade guys out next week.
The trade guide is worth the price ESPN Plus if it's on ESPN Plus. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you,
Thanks,
Jackson.
Brian.
Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you guys later this week.